those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight here on 2ARM FM. Today in the station I have David Mills. G'day, David.
G'day, Herb. How are you going? And hello to all your listeners out there.
Thanks, mate. So you're from Gyra, or you live in Gyra?
Yep, that's right. Certainly do. They're on the top of the hill.
And how long have you been in Gyra?
Well, Herb, I came to Gyra in the early 2000s, so yeah, approximately a bit over 20 years, and brought my family up and my son and daughter, and yeah, we're loving it up there.
But you told me that you actually had a bit longer connection way back with Gyra.
Yeah, so we settled on Gyra. I was actually brought up in Sydney, went to school down there and worked with the family business. And then we moved up, as I said, in early 2000. And the reason was my granddad's brothers had some soldier settlement scheme blocks after World War II there. So as a youngster, I'd say about six or seven, we used to go out there every school holidays and couldn't wait to come up to the bush from Sydney, doing all those fun things that kids do the bush.
I think that's a bit of a thing about Australian society, is that many people had that connection. If they lived in the city there, many people had the connection with somebody in the country, a relative who had a farm with all the bits and pieces. In school holidays, was always a big thing for city kids to come up and go to the folks' place and have a country upbringing.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my mum came over from Ireland when she was 16, and when we did start coming up to Gyra, it actually reminded her the New England colours, and coming through Armidale, you know, through autumn, was absolutely beautiful. And the worst part of the holidays were actually going home back to Sydney. So yeah, we'd always get ready and look forward to our next stint up in the bush, and then it was working careers, but we always had that affinity with Gyra, and then had that opportunity early 2000 to live up here in, you know, fantastic climate and a really good community.
You did mention the colours and the seasonality of New England. Many people sort of say the same thing about the New England.
They certainly do, and I've sort of been involved with a lot of organisations there, and it seems to be the common theme, four seasons. It really is spectacular, and, you know, they're just long enough, those seasons. By the time you get towards the end of winter, you've certainly had enough if you throw wood on fire, etc. But no, it truly is a beautiful part of the world.
So what did you do when you first came up to Gyra?
Yeah, well, I'm a locksmith by trade and a safe maker, Herb. So I took my hand at doing a little bit of handyman work, and it took me a year or two to network and know a few people. So handyman working, then it turned into a little bit of building work as well. And then I had a seven-year stint with Ray White Rural as a residential real estate salesperson.
And what do you do now?
I've got a great job for the Armidale Waldorf School as the maintenance coordinator, and thoroughly enjoying it. There's, yeah, a great community out there.
So some people are a little bit critical of the Waldorf School, but it's probably because they don't know what goes on there. Give us a bit of your experience. You've only been there 12 months or so, but what goes on at Waldorf School? Why is it different than other schools?
Yeah, I don't know that it's any different. I think every school's different in its own right. But there's a community out there that are very caring, and they follow Steiner philosophy of teaching, and they're now going towards year 11 and year 12. So they're really moving ahead there. They've got a great business manager and education director out there. They've got about 140 students, I believe, and there's roughly around 40 staff, and set on 18 acres with some fantastic architecturally designed classrooms. And it's a very nice bush setting. So we've got quite a big responsibility in maintaining the premises. And it's just, I guess, if anyone really wanted to come out and have a look, we've got a spring fair coming up in November, and it's probably a great time to have a bit of a look around there. All the wattles out, as everyone knows, and spring has certainly sprung. Yeah, there's some big plans, and there's renovations going on. And yeah, look, it certainly keeps us busy with a couple of great people working for me.
In terms of the maintenance and the gardens and all that stuff, is there sort of newer technology that's implemented into wastewater recycling and those types of things?
Well, that's a good question, and it is one thing that probably sets aside the walled-off school from some of these other schools. It's quite self-sufficient, so we do have rainwater. We capture all of the rainwater off the multitude of buildings there, you know, and we're the same as probably any other commercial organisation. There's UV filters, etc., and all the water's tested locally here, and we've got untreated Malpas water that comes in that does all the gardens. Yeah, we've got systems that work through and then go into grey water and go through into Lamandra reed beds, and then there that water that's treated as goes back up into irrigation for other parts of the gardens. So I guess the forebearers of the school, and there would have been so many of them that had a lot of good thoughts and put into place, and it just really is a good school and a good school philosophy, I think, for kids. I get so many contractors actually come in and go, gee whiz, I never realised how nice this place is, and my kids would have excelled in this sort of environment. So it is a very calming place to work, and I think it's a bit of a dream job, to be actually honest, Herb.
What you've pointed to is sustainability, like caring for the environment, doing everything you can. And if that's a philosophy, if that's what's actually happening out there physically, then that's got to move into the philosophy of the school and the teaching. So that's fantastic, I think.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Oh, great. Now, you've got a couple of kids. They're in high school now.
Yeah, they were at high school. Time has flown. So my youngest one has just left year 12. She did a stint with St Mary's in Gyra and then at O'Connor for 4 years, and then finished at TAS. My son has, he went through TAS from transition, and he's now working in the earth moving game, and my daughter's studying paramedics down in Wodonga.
Oh, well, so excellent. Now, I know that you're a member of the Gyra Lions Club.
That's been a great experience, and it certainly was to get to know and understand what goes on around your own communities. And I think that's the beauty of living in small communities. You can really become a part of them, or you can just sit back and not do anything. So the options are all there. But I did get asked by my mum's gardener in the very first month or so what I was doing on a Thursday night. He said, would you like to come to the Gyra Bowling and Recreation Club? And I said, yeah, sure. And I guess the next thing I knew, I was sitting in the Gyra Lions Club and having dinner with them, and it was very hard to sort of say no to continuing on. So 20 years later, I'm still a member of our small little club. They do a lot of great community service work, and I guess all the revenue that we do raise goes back into the local community and some other places.
So we're just to put a plug, we've got the Gyra Trout Festival coming up. That's a yearly thing. So that's another positive thing for Gyra, the Trout Festival. It's always been good.
Yeah, the Trout Festival, I've been involved in it for quite a few years, and there's some great people. There's so many different parts of the community that get involved. Trout, we've got Dino's Trout Farm up there, and they do a great job really of showcasing the area and the region, and he's got a great little setup there. So they do everything to be part of it, and so too do the Gyra Progress Associations, and the Lions Club do a part there. We all ever cook barbecues, and you've got your tents and stall holders. And a great time for the kids. So the 10th dam on the bowling club, golf club, they've got a new pontoon out there, and I think there's a fountain there that's been donated a couple of years ago. So the kids have a wonderful time sort of fishing there. They, you know, they get a couple of old trout into those dams there, and they're nearly guaranteed to catch one or two. But it's good, and I think it's all about the kids, and it's all about getting people into our towns and having a bit of a good time now that winter's nearly over.
And also now that COVID, the post-COVID hangover is really starting to diminish a bit. So I think anything we can do, and you've also got the Lamb Potato Festival obviously in Gyra, which is another draw card for tourists and locals to get together and a bit of economic stimulation into the town.
Yeah, that's right, Herb. Isn't it great that the COVID hangover's nearly over, and I know it's still floating around and a few people get hit by it. But let's hope everyone stays safe out there and does the right thing. We certainly had a long enough time there to learn what to do and what not to do. But, yep, it's a busy season, certainly from now on till the end of summer there with festivals and the Lamb and Potato Festival. They certainly capture a lot of the market share going up and down the New England Highway. And, yeah, that's a great use of time there for so many community groups that get involved and get a little bit of remuneration from all their hard work. So, yeah, it's a good one there, Herb. Fantastic.
So, pastimes, what do you do or what have you done? What have you developed in terms of your pastimes and away from work?
Pastimes, I don't mind going out into the bush and cutting a bit of firewood, Herb, the Serenity, and I'd like to do a bit of adventure motorbike riding with some of these other groups around. Again, it just goes to show actually what is off the beaten track. We certainly got some wonderful gorges and areas up and down our escarpments. Cycling, yes, we've been involved with that since I've been up here, and there's a couple of groups that we get involved with. But yeah, I think it doesn't take much to keep busy with your pastime, Herb.
Yep, so cycling. You told me something about the Gyra Cycling Club. Tell me about the Gyra Cycling Club.
Yeah, Gyra Cycling Club's a great eclectic bunch of boys and girls, from fencers to farmers to shearers to anyone that's like-minded that wants to get out and go for a bit of a pedal for an hour or a day or a week. But in general, yeah, we meet at 5:30 in the morning and go for an hour ride like we did this morning out the Baldersley Road, sort of stick into a bit of headwind there and then turn around. You've got your wind on the back pushing you back into town. But it's all about, I guess, a little bit of health and social health and well-being, just getting out and having a bit of go, just the same as people jump into the gym.
No, I think that's definitely the case, cycling, getting fit and healthy and being with other people. Tour de Rocks, you've been involved with that.
I have been involved, yes, with Tour de Rocks. It is a fantastic organisation and have done so much for cancer and cancer research and assistance and help in our community. And, you know, a lot of donations go to Can Assist and therapies and studies. So I've ridden all 10 of them, Herb, and enjoyed everyone. Have not had one bad moment there. I do a little bit on the board every now and again when I've got a bit of time, but there certainly are some fantastic people and a great organisation.
So I had Kay Endres in and had a fantastic interview with her about how Tour de Rock started with her son and a friend of her son's doing Duke of Edinburgh Award. Yeah, yeah, so it's a great story. And they've raised, I couldn't believe it, they'd raised over $2 million in the first 10 years.
Yep.
And I think the last one, don't quote me, $473,000 or something.
I think it's something around there. It's getting bigger and bigger, Herb, and people from the coast are coming in. It's fantastic.
And what blows me away is that they've just used the same model all the time, different places in terms of because the road down to Kempsey's been closed, but they've gone around that, and they've got the same people, the same model. It's all using food is provided locally. People come up, they're just doing the same thing all the time, and they're raising huge amounts of money for local cancer treatment and
yep.
support. It's not going somewhere else. It's just kept locally.
Yep.
Everything's local.
Yeah, that's right. And look, there's no magic bullet for cancer there, Herb. But there certainly are organisations like Can Assist, and if we can get appropriations to some of these organisations, they assist these people that are suffering cancer, whether it's helping out with a bill or some way that we can just make it a little bit easier for people in our communities. That's what we're all about. So, yeah, we're very community-focused, minded, dynamic. If there's a road closed, well, we'll go around somewhere else. And there's always some farmer that's obliging to help either with direction to go through their place. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Tell me, what else you've been doing with cycling around the place?
Yeah, lots of things, Herb. We just like getting out and cycling. The Gyra Cycling Crew, they actually have a ride coming up with the Westpac helicopter. So this will be our third year riding for them. The Westpac helicopter ride for the chopper, I should say, has been going for 21 years. So that goes through a different place all the time. So we get to see whether it's the coast, whether it's inland. But Westpac helicopter, we've raised just a touch over $6,000. You know, what a remarkable organisation again there, saving lives.
So when was that ride? Was that just recently that you raised the 6,000 or?
Yeah, Herb, only in the last month. We've done a little bit on social media. You're invited to try and raise over $600 each. There's only 10 of us riding, so we've achieved that goal. We've had some farmers that have donated a bale of wool. Fantastic for them. And then, yeah, we did a bit of a wood raffle. So again, you know, it gets that opportunity to get out in the bush and pick up some sticks and make $1,000 out of that. Local community really are good. If you're doing the hard work and you're only asking a dollar a ticket, they come to the party with these great organisations.
Well, I think that's the thing, you just nailed it, is that local community raising money for local charities or local use of money is the important thing, where you're a bit sort of in not so much to contribute when the money is going to go out of the region, but if you know clearly that the money's staying in here and all the efforts that you're putting in, or the people that you're supporting or sponsoring, because it's not about everybody doing the ride, it's about sponsoring the people that are doing the ride. So you don't actually have to do the sweat and blood and tears.
Yeah, that's right.
You actually give the money for them to do the sponsor. But because you know, like Tour de Rocks, like the Westpac rescue helicopter,
yep,
it's local.
Yep.
You know, it's serving local people and you don't mind kicking the tin.
No, that's exactly right. Just like 19 for 19, the fantastic work that Rob College have only done there. Oh, what was the other one the other day? There was an MS fundraiser in Guyra. I think they raised about $8,000 on the night for the local area for MS. So there's local community members are very generous when they know it's coming in to help their own community.
And then when you add places like, even though they're sort of national, the Vinnies and the Salvos, they're still working in our local region as well to provide services and support for people who need those services and support.
Yep, absolutely.
So I know that you were involved with NERT Inc. in the beginning. Tell me about that. What's NERT Inc.?
NERT Inc., that's the acronym for New England Rail Trail Incorporated. It was incorporated back in 2014. I and a few others, we started it and formalised it. It was actually started a little bit earlier. Well, not NERT Inc., but the idea of this New England Rail Trail was started by a councillor in Guyra Shire Council, and the local member at the time, Richard Torbay, took it to Parliament. And then a chap by the name of Bruce Graham in Armidale started up a social media website in those days and pushed it through. So I guess we all got together and we formalised it and took it from there. So it's been kicked around there since early 2000s, Herb.
So how did New South Wales Regional Development Department get involved in the business case? How did that all work?
Yeah, very back in the early days. So it was quite poignant at about 2014. There was actually another organisation, Rail Trails for New South Wales startup. So Victoria's got something like 30 or 40 rail trails, and every other state have them except for New South Wales. And that's purely because of some legislation. I won't get into all the finer details, Herb, but they had I think there was kicking around at that time about 15 groups around the state of New South Wales trying to get a rail trail up and running. And again, we needed to know what the government wanted, and there was quite a bit of detail. So we embarked in that, and it was, you know, build a business case, provide a trail development plan, feasibility studies, biosecurity, community consultation. So at the time, Gladys Berejiklian said this to all of us at this Rail Trails for New South Wales launch in Parliament House, and I thought, wow, that is a big undertaking, and it's taken a 10-year journey to now, and probably most people out there have seen and heard of what's been going on, but we're just poking along.
So business case, where did the money to actually develop the business case, did it come from government, or how did you get the business case?
Yeah, the business case. Yeah, very good question. So part of this journey was also to communicate with regional New South Wales, and we have a local representative business manager by the name of Peter Sneakers. I've worked very closely with Peter for 10 years, and he's helped that office had to develop some guidelines so we could actually set a trend for the other community groups as well. chasing these dreams. We had to come up with a business case. We got some quotes and, yeah, it was in the tens of thousands of dollars. And I thought, how are we going to get that? So I was encouraged to do a crowdfunding campaign on social media. I've never done anything like that before. It was challenging. It was took a lot of time and effort, but it didn't take long to raise $48,000 from the Guyra, Armidale and Glen Innes communities, both from individuals and from businesses. And Regional Development Australia Northern Inland, a very good person there that actually Smart wrote the business case, David Thompson. They also provided a bit of in-kind support. So we had a very good professional business case.
So let's take the business case to the funding that's been provided. Tell me how, so the business case was a supporting document for funding applications for the rail trails that have been talked about in Armidale and Guyra?
Yeah, that's right, Herb. There was the last document that we needed for submission for some of these grants that would be provided for or to actually apply for. So the trail development plan, the biosecurity, the other ones that we just mentioned, the business case, were all the documents together, and we applied for multiple grant applications and we were successful on two of them. So they were actually ratified by both federal and state economists, and obviously with all of the submissions all around the state, we were successful in being granted $14.1 million.
So let's just split that up. So it wasn't, you didn't have to apply for the grants, it was Armidale, correct me if I'm wrong, Armidale Council applied, Glen Innes Council applied, Armidale received $5.4 million. And Glen Innes received $8.9 million to do their rail trails. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So NERT Inc., as we talked about, worked very closely with both councils. And both councils obviously have some financial input there with some of those studies, the trail development plan. And both councils are lead proponents on the rail trail.
So just going back to NERT Inc., NERT Inc. isn't a for-profit organisation. It's basically a community non-profit organisation that you guys set up.
Correct.
How many people set it up in the beginning?
There are about 12 or 15 of us members and about 8 people on the board.
So that's it blows me away a little bit in that you guys, 10 to 12 people, 15 people, community people not paid to do this work, raised $48,000 to get the business case going, which is now transferred into, what did you say, 14?
14, a bit over 14 million.
14 odd million dollars to put the rail trail in from Armidale, well, the first stage, Armidale to Jumeirik platform, and then obviously up through Glen Innes, Dino's Trout Farm at Black Mountain, through to Guyra.
Big beneficiaries.
Yeah, Guyra, Ben Lomond.
Yep.
Up through to Glen Innes. So now, just recently, we note that NERT Inc., New England Rail Trail Inc., has morphed into Friends of New England Rail Trail. So tell me about what that organisation is. It's a move in the direction of progress, I hope.
Yes, it certainly is. It's a strategic move for strength, and I think strength in numbers, strength in voices to the state government to let them know that, you know, now we've got over 100, pushing towards 200 financial members. We'll be having our first AGM coming up in the next month. And it's through from the great work of Visions of New England 2030, so you might know Maria Hitchcock, who you've interviewed before.
I certainly know Maria. She's done a lot, not only, well, wattle we talked about before, Wattle Day, and plants, whatever she seems to get involved in, she's a real go-getter.
Yeah, she did. And I think that was purely based on all of the hard work that everyone had done, and then there was a couple of poor decisions made at council, and we had to fight those. So if you've been advocating for something for decades and you've got some funding there and everything's there lined up, and then we get a poor decision. Well, the community came out and spoke very strongly about what happened on that council meeting back in April. So Maria got behind it, and certainly, you know, we wound up with a petition with 6,000 people within 3 or 4 weeks, I believe, that let them know, you know, we're moving forward. So Yep, there's always one step forward, slow at a time, and we'll get there.
Yeah, I think, well, you've sort of demonstrated the commitment from the group and then expanding that group into a bigger group with more strength. And I suppose one of the things that I look at is the benefits. What would the benefits? So you might actually just explore some of the business case at the moment. So just a couple of key things from the business case. What principally are the benefits of putting a rail trail in New England?
Well, I see the biggest benefit, which we couldn't really document, is health and social well-being. So there's an opportunity to use an asset for grandmas, granddads, mums, dads, kids. It's safe and it's something new until such time as that asset needs to be renewed again, which will always be the case. The other benefits are economic development. On the business case, it shows that there's about 14,000 per annum of users that potentially would stay overnight. So we can only think of that's more people to our B&Bs, to our motels, and there's been a few purchases of properties and developments for B&Bs, etc.
So you're talking about 14,000 additional people per year,
yes,
coming to the region because of this government-funded project?
Yep, absolutely correct. And that was put on a conservative scale. So we're talking a couple of hundred people a week.
So is there an economic figure that sort of relates to those 14,000, roughly?
Yes. In the business case, it's up around that $5 million per annum. And I think it's 25 FTE, full-time equivalent employment jobs.
So that again, $5 million extra dollars a year coming into the region?
Yes, correct.
And 25 potential jobs extra?
Correct.
Than we currently have?
Yep.
And the funding's here available?
Funding's here available.
My thought is about the first section, which goes to Jimmerik Platform. And I talked to John Galatley a little bit about Jimmerik Dam, and it'd be great to actually have an offshoot, a branch line going from the first section of the rail trail to the new Jimmerik Dam upgraded place. Have you been out to Jimmerik Dam?
I have had a couple of looks at it, Herb, and they've done a great job out there. Tremendous.
And there's a lot of bikes going out along the road, even though it's a 100K speed road, there's plenty of bikes going out there now. So I could imagine if you've got the rail trail to Jimmerik Platform, having that branch line to Jimmerik Dam would be perfect.
Yeah, look, absolutely. You've only got to look at the track that's been pounded in along the pathway there, or the off the side of the road towards Jimmerik there. Yeah, make no mistake, it'll actually be very beneficial there. And I think some of these new rail trails, the Northern Rivers Rail Trail, I rode that and I've had a look from out of the station areas. They're very inclusive, and I think that's the big part about it. So there might be hot mixed bitumen for 1 or 2 or 3 kilometres to start with. And so, you can look at wheelchairs, you can look at the elderly, you can look at prams. So it's just a safe environment and an easy gradient.
I think Maria mentioned, which I sort of didn't think about, she mentioned when I interviewed her about schools having their sports days, jumping on the rail trail, sending the kids to Jimmerik Platform and back. Perfect sort of distance,
yep,
to get in, get their fitness. They can bring their bikes, they can run, they can walk, they can talk to each other,
yeah,
play music as they go. So that was something that I hadn't thought about.
Yep. So that's with all the schools too, Black Mountain, Ben Lomond. The risk assessment, so easy for the teachers just to sign off and go, well, we're in a safe corridor here, no problem.
Kay Andres brought up when I interviewed her about and you just mentioned before, the 19 for 19, where they walked 19 kilometres.
Yes, so that's right.
The funny thing is, Jimmerik Platform and return from Jimmerik Platform is pretty well the 19 kilometres.
Yeah, that's right. That's about nine and a half up and nine and a half back.
Yeah, so that's the perfect thing. So you could actually utilise that safe space for that program for a
race. That's right, or there might be an Armidale half marathon that someone might want to sort of take up again, 10 up and 10 back, and there's another opportunity for other organisations. There's a multitude, and it's only demonstrated everywhere else. It's not like we're doing something different or crazy.
So I think that comes back, you said everywhere else. I'm a firm believer if there's a model working somewhere, you can actually bring it into your own community and run that model, because it's been demonstrated elsewhere. But we've actually got well, a couple of models there. We've got the model that Kay Endres and family and people have developed with the Tour de Rocks.
Yep.
That model works in Armidale, and it's proven to work, and it raises money, and it's all the health benefits of that. You've got the rail trail model that's worked New Zealand and everywhere else in Australia that's been done. It's a proven model. Yeah. All we're doing is bringing a known entity into our region. It's funded. All we've got to do is actually get the wheels turning and get it going.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, rail trails aren't just for latte-sipping, lycra-clad elitists. They're about for everyday community people that want to do a little bit of recreation, go out, show someone else news, show off our region, and it's absolutely proven everywhere else. So, yeah, no, we're excited to keep pushing along and work for the majority, Herb.
So just talk about wheels turning. One of the things that came up, I'm not sure who I interviewed, but one of the things that came up is the ability to put, so we've got a rail line that comes up to Armidale.
Yep.
Service from Sydney, and people can jump on at any point on the way up from Sydney up to here. But one of the issues that was raised that you can't, there's a limit on the number of bikes that you can put on the XPT to come up. But I think you've got a bit of a bombshell to tell us that something has just recently changed.
Yeah, it's only very recently, I believe yesterday or the day before, there's been a bit of announcement that they're going to trial wheel-on, wheel-off bikes. So they'll have some part of the carriage there that you'll be able to just put your bike in, wheel it in, put it on a rack and then go get your seat. So there's been a couple of groups that have been very active in trying to get rid of this old put your bike in a box, semi sort of disassemble it and then pack it away and then only have to get it out and do the same thing again and you're left with a box and a mess. So yes, the Regional Minister for Transport, Jenny Aitchison, has made an announcement they'll be doing a bit of a trial on the existing fleet, and then there is a new fleet that they're going to wheel out very soon, which is great news as well. So we see the train is a fantastic asset of coming to Armidale and bringing tourism in to ride this rail trail or walk it or run it.
Perfect. Well, look, David, I thank you for all your groups of cyclists for getting us to this point and for you coming in and talking today on Community Spotlight. It's been a wealth of information. You're one of our community members. You're one of our gems in our community, and I thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much, Herb. I totally enjoyed it. And thank you to all your listeners for putting up with me out there. Good on you.
And that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.